KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's always good to have old friends back to do this show, and especially old friends with a new iteration of a adventure they were previously here to talk about. And of course, that's the L Word, which is now the L Word Generation Q on Showtime. Its creator and executive producer, Eileen Chaykin, sitting across from me. So good to have you back here.
I'm so happy to be back.
And I guess the thing that really strikes me, we were talking a little bit before we got started, about the show, is that it's really now, as much as anything, about power and how power is used, and institutional power versus intimate power. I mean, that feels like it's almost a theme right out of the box with the show this time around.
I think that's right. I think that it's about the power we accrue over time as we pursue our paths. It's about the political power that we've all fought so hard for. And also, it's about people who are born with power and people that are not born with power, and how we negotiate among those factions.
It's interesting, too, just because one of your protagonists from the previous L Word is now a political candidate for the mayor of Los Angeles, but kind of, in some ways, a reluctant candidate. Is she not?
Yes, and I wonder, I don't know if this is true, but in some ways, aren't the best candidates reluctant candidates?
Well, yes. I mean, we get to see her large wrestling with her own moral questions the way she did in much more intimate terms in the first version of the L Word.
And Bette will always wrestle with her demons. I think that this is something she wants. She would probably not want to admit that in part it comes from ambition, but it does. I mean, she's an ambitious person, but it also is really about fighting the fights that she's always fought in every kind of chapter of her life.
We were talking before we got started, and you said that you were basically, you guys are all friends, mm-hmm. and that you were kind of lobbied, actually, kind of, you were lobbied to return, and because I felt a sense of closure when it went away mm-hmm. 10 years ago now.
Yeah.
And but also that it could have been reopened had you chose to reopen that role. But I felt there was a kind of, not finality, but a kind of resignation mm-hmm. when the show went away.
Well, I mean, we intended for it to be, you know, in the world of the L Word, a finality, because we believed that we were passing the torch, that we had done something that turned out to be very special to all of us and to a lot of other people. And we hoped that we had opened some doors. And over the course of time, I mean, I think that there is much better LGBTQ representation on television and in the entertainment media now than there was. But it didn't happen quickly, and it didn't happen in the way we expected it to. And particularly, queer women were not turning up on television in the way that we hoped they would. And we really felt an absence. So we kind of kicked the door back open.
Was it a tough decision, though? Because, again, I didn't want to say that the door was closed, but it was a satisfying ending.
I don't think everybody thought it was a satisfying ending. I get a lot of flack for the final season, but nonetheless, it was.
Well, you know, yeah. but as in dramatic terms,
exactly,
it was
an ending. It was an ending. Someday, some showrunner is going to do a perfect ending to a show, and the fans are going to love it.
I know you love to know that you get. If it's not going to be provocative, then you're not interested in it. I mean,
absolutely.
It's got to be about causing conversation as much as creating context for the characters.
Yes.
And for that, I just thought, well, part of this means that you've got to reimagine this, but you also, in some ways, got to top yourself, don't you?
Yes. Now, an important part of the premise of bringing back the show is that, as I'm sure you know, I'm not the showrunner. And when we finally decided to do this, and as I said, Jennifer, Kate, and Leisha had been lobbying me, talking to me about it for a number of years. And when I finally felt that it was the right moment to go to Showtime with it, part of my pitch to them was, I shouldn't do this new show. We should bring back these three characters and maybe many other characters from the original show over the course of time. We'll see. But we should also introduce a new ensemble to the show, partly a younger ensemble. I don't want to say that it's all about age, but definitely, you know, stories about women coming up in the way that these women were coming up when we first told the show. And in order to do that with any kind of authenticity, there should be a new, younger showrunner, writer, who brings a fresh point of view to it.
And there really is an enormous kind of intersectionality to the show now. It's about not only crossing generations, but the ethnic spectrum has really been opened up in a way that reflects this city, hasn't it?
Yes. Yes, and that was extremely important. Even before Marja Lewis Ryan, who is the new showrunner, came on.
And did a terrific film a few years back, yeah.
Yes, yeah. She's a really gifted filmmaker. But even before that, one of the operating principles was that the show will be more reflective of L.A. and of our intersectional communities.
I think what's interesting about it, too, by the way, it's the treatment we're talking about, the L Word, Generation Q, with creator of the L Word and executive producer Eileen Chaykin. I think what's interesting about it to me is, again, I just want to get back to how, in this version, wrestling with one's own recognition of one's power in so many ways is, I mean, the way certain people walk indoors. And I don't want to give too much away because I want people to watch. And the way, and also, we're talking about younger people and certainly a different generation, but a lot of that opening up and being open about one's own sexuality is still an issue. I mean, that hasn't gone away despite the ease with which a lot of the characters deal. I think a really worthy topic.
I think so, too. And it is still an issue. And I wonder if it will ever not be an issue because, I mean, in the course of our own lives, we have to come to a reckoning about identity. I mean, if you're a queer person, you don't necessarily know that until a certain point in your life. So that's always a personal story, even if the circumstances in the world at large have changed, even if in some sectors there's more acceptance and in some there's still quite a lot of resistance, obviously. We still have to figure out who we are and how to be with ourselves.
I guess I'm fascinated, too, because that when you use that word acceptance, the way people talk about acceptance but haven't really accepted is a big part of this current version. You know, this it's almost to me like going to South Africa and hearing them talk about truth and reconciliation. Well, no, things haven't changed that much.
No, things haven't changed that much. And there are all kinds of nuances. I mean, you know, tolerance isn't acceptance. One of the things we want is to move well beyond tolerance.
I guess I want to ask you, too, when the conversation became about openly trading in power, which it's almost in some ways like the Montagues and the Capulets and intimate relationships, but also in political relationships as well. I mean, these sides in conflict and while trying to reconcile identity is really kind of a big theme running throughout this new version too, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that it plays, as you said, in the micro and in the macro. I mean, power in relationships, power in love has always been a big theme of the show. And I think the new show is exploring it in a really provocative way. I mean, I once had a therapist who told me there is no power in love, and I disagree.
Well, what do you say in a situation like that when somebody says something?
When she's your therapist?
Yes, when you're spending money for this.
You have an interesting discussion. I don't know. I think there is power in every relationship. And I think that maybe especially in love relationships, you're always vying for power. Maybe you sometimes trade back and forth. But that's reflected in the show. And the kind of larger picture reflects the smaller picture.
Explain that a little more.
Well, I mean, Danny and Sophie, you know, the new young couple at the center of the show, there's a real power dynamic going on there. And it's a power dynamic that I think then gets shifted into Danny's relationship with Bette, which I think will all become really interesting as we go forward.
In that case, it's really about identity and her owning up to who and what she is and her relationship with her father and stepping in with Bette, who becomes kind of a maternal figure, but also kind of an idol, but also forces her to recognize or to ask herself how much of her position is just lip service.
Yeah.
Which the difference between what you say and what you do, which really comes to the fore.
Yes.
And it's always been a part of the show, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Walking the walk. Authenticity is a very big theme and subject in the show.
But it's spoken in much bolder terms than it had been in the first version of the L Word, which I think is interesting. Is that a generational thing too, do you think?
I think it must be a generational thing. I mean, the new show would be failing itself if it wasn't bolder. We have to get bolder as we go forward. We have to talk more openly and assertively about who we are and what we want and demand, I think, don't we?
Yeah. But I think even in just sort of in staging terms, there are a lot more people around all the time in this version than there were before. It was a much more intimate show that often took place at night. And I'm struck by, in these few episodes I've seen, how much daylight, how much sunlight there is in the show now.
Well, part of that is that we get to shoot this new show in L.A. It's fabulous. It's gorgeous. We get to shoot the sunlight. You know, Vancouver, when you're cheating Vancouver for L.A., one of the things you're cheating is light and the sunshine.
But also, the size of this city as compared to Vancouver.
Yes.
And I mean, it's not just the location, but it's also there's a kind of a scale that I think actually fits the emotional tenor of the show this time around.
I agree. The show really feels bigger in scale. You can feel Los Angeles all around you, and you can't do that when you're not really here. And it's a city with a powerful persona, and it's kind of thrilling to actually be here and to be able to infuse all of those moments with that sense of light and color and scale.
Was that conditional for you? Did you think that it had to be here just because that was an ingredient that the show demanded?
I think that if Showtime hadn't already been there, and they were, there was never any discussion about it, then I would have fought for it. But I think we all knew. And we're, you know, we're in a different moment in our industry. Back when we made the original L Word, nothing shot in LA. I mean, very little. And especially shows that were trying to do something new, that were risk-taking. We went to Canada for obvious reasons, for business reasons. Now we're in a universe where we're competing against, you know, big shows with big budgets, and we have an expectation that things look real and authentic and good, really good. And this new show looks good.
Was that part of the fun of revisiting it and being able to bring these resources that you had not been able to bring in the past?
Absolutely. Yes, it's really fun and exciting to have all of those resources at our disposal.
It's interesting because I would say, and we actually mentioned this before, that there was a really kind of lovely melancholic sotto voce quality to the version of the show. I haven't talked to you about this version because we're just sitting down, but this feels operatic to me. And I thought, wonder if that was, as you were looking at, well, the ways to make this feel different, or you thought, well, there's got to be bigger voices and bigger personalities, because there are in this.
I would answer that I see it in the same way as you, but I didn't know because I turned it over to someone else,
right,
and I was waiting to see what her tone would be, what she would do with this world and these characters. And I think that it's appropriate. It's appropriate to where we've come and how we've evolved in these 10 years. I feel like we're so much more present, and we can be more dense and operatic, if you will.
We'll take a break and go sotto voce for a second. My guest is Eileen Chaykin, creator of The L Word, which is now The L Word Generation Q on Showtime. It's a treat, but there's more to come. Stay with us.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Welcome back. It's a treatment. I'm thrilled to have Eileen Chaykin back here again. We're talking about the new L Word, L Word Generation Q, which is on Showtime. And I guess I was asking these things because I just thought, as you were talking to your actors about bringing it back, you thought, well, what would it take to make this feel like it wasn't just revisiting it, but making it a new show, because there's no point in just doing a sequel that's just a retread of what's been done before.
So when we first started talking about it, one of the things I said to them is, I think you're right. I think we should bring this show back, but there has to be a reason. When we go to Showtime and talk about this, we have to tell them why the show comes back. And it's in part because there's not another show that's really taken its place.
That Isn't it shocking?
Yeah, it's shocking. It's shocking. And I've been saying, you know, because people still are asking me why bring it back. There's space. There is absolutely space. Nobody has filled the space. There's also a need, because there's a need for representation. And I mean, all of us, all communities need representation. We need to see ourselves, young people, older people. We need that representation. But there's also a real yearning and desire for a show that celebrates the lives of lesbians and our LGBTQ sisters and brothers. There's all of that. That's a good reason to bring it back, but we've got to have something new to say.
And did you enumerate those, what those things might be, or did you just sort of say, well, we'll find it as we're doing it?
I said, biggest piece of this is that somebody new is going to come and bring her perspective to it. She's going to speak from the point of view of a generation that we'll just call Generation Q, that's come up after we got marriage rights, after we changed a lot of things, but in a moment when now we're threatened once again in a way that we haven't been for quite some time. We're pushing against social currents, a desire to turn back all of the gains we've won. So we're in that moment. And also, she's just going to talk about how this generation negotiates gender and language and relationships in a way that is kind of new.
It's interesting, because I guess I find myself thinking and watching this show now and then going back to watch just, and I got lost watching when I started again, which is kind of like going through three seasons of it, how this current version seems to be about a level of expectation and how much can we also get. And trying to sort of balance expectation versus reality, whereas each of those battles in the first version were really hard-won battles. I mean, mm-hmm. there were fights. And so just the difference of the landscape seeming to be more inviting than it actually is.
Than it actually is. I think that that's part of what some of these characters will learn, that no sense of entitlement ever gets fulfilled in the way that those expectations start out. These battles will be hard won too, and these people still have a lot to overcome, some of the same old things and some new, some personal and some geopolitical.
What an elegant way of putting it. But I guess as we're talking about this, I still find, and it must have been over these years, incredibly, you must have expected at some point during any given year that somebody's going to basically take on what would be the next step after the L Word.
I expected it almost immediately, and I've expected it year after year. And I'm not saying that there aren't television shows. There certainly aren't movies, but there are television shows that are representing LGBTQ characters in fabulous and interesting ways. But it really took some time. I mean, I was waiting for a lesbian superhero. There finally is one on the CW. But I thought that was going to happen a lot sooner. You know, I'm still waiting for some shows with gay characters in the protagonist role that portray gay lives, but aren't all about gay culture, but still accurately and interestingly reflect our cultures.
It's funny because metaphorically speaking, there seems to be almost a sequence, and this I know going to play out in big explosive ways, where there's talk about what a bar, and that there's an appetite for a gay bar. Wow, that's kind of a metaphor for this what's happened in the 10 years since the show was on.
Well, and it's a metaphor, and it's true. There are no more lesbian bars. There are still gay bars, gay men still congregate in bars. But when the show went off the air, there were still some lesbian bars in L.A. There is not a single lesbian bar in L.A. And there's a reason for it, maybe.
Which is what?
Well, I mean, I'm not exactly sure. But, I mean, one of the things we talk about is that it's not how lesbians necessarily congregate. But they're mostly economic reasons. You know, it's just still queer women don't hold a space in the same way that women, you know, don't yet have parity, and we're still fighting for parity. And it's hard to sustain our own institutions. So that's political. That's interesting. It's dramatic. It's somewhat disturbing.
I think it's so much a part of the fabric of this show. And also seeing that some of these younger women reflecting some of the older women in ways that are really interesting, like seeing Shane with somebody who could, in some ways, almost have been her before we met her on The L Word.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a little bit of meta that we can't really reflect in the show, but it's kind of there anyway.
Because I was going to ask you that, too, because there's a mirroring effect. But again, these mirrors are almost like we're seeing versions of those characters, Bette or Shane, before we met them on the show. So you get a chance to sort of like, in some ways, go back to and explain, or not explain, but offer parts of their lives in dramatic terms that we didn't get to see, that they only talked about.
I hear from people, you know, well, she's kind of like Shane once was, or is she the new Bette? But I think that what's also interesting is, how is she different from Bette? How does she come at it differently, but also how does the world treat her differently?
Well, again, if we took those characters before we met them and transplanted them to the current day, where, again, apparently things are different, that becomes part of the whole kind of swirl of it. At least it was for me. I just found myself reacting that way. Ah, so if you took what Bette would have been like 10 years before the show and then transplanted it to now, this would be it. Almost with the same kind of, I don't want to say, parental issues, but in a lot of different, of ways, very similar, aren't they?
And Bette had some of those parental issues. She absolutely did. And I mean, there's a lot going on in Danny's life that really mirrors what went on in Bette's life. So maybe some things never change.
It's a treat. We're talking about all kinds of things, but what my guest, creator of The L Word, Eileen Chaykin, has brought to that show, and what's happening now with the new version, The L Word Generation Q on Showtime. But there is an excitement in this show. I feel like it almost from the outset, the show just there's an adrenaline level. I'm not even talking about what happens in the very first scene.
that's adrenaline of a sort.
No, an entirely adrenaline of a sort, but also a way to sort of say, well, this is the way that things really haven't changed so much in that world, and how they unfortunately haven't changed that much in television either. Talk about arriving at that point for that first scene.
I mean, I think some of the adrenaline comes from the fact that we're excited to be back. That first scene is very in your face. I mean, we did a lot of love scenes on The L Word, and we had some kind of guiding principles. They always want it to be about something. We are always telling a story. We want it to be really specific about what sex is, and I talked a lot about sex with actors, and, you know, some who weren't necessarily gay and hadn't done some of the things that they were portraying and would talk to me about, well, how does that work? And we came out of the gate with this show just very boldly saying, here we are. I mean, there's, you know, back in the day, we would have said, we're here, we're queer, get used to it. Nobody says it anymore. But I kind of think that that opening scene is coming at you in that way.
No, there's an openness and daring you to look away from it that I feel like in the best moments is what The L Word it always has been, isn't it?
I hope so. I hope that it's a little bit of a dare, but also an invitation.
Yeah, but again, even that scene is about power.
Isn't sex about power sometimes?
I don't want to disagree with your therapist, but I just think there is so much ground laid in that first episode that it's almost like you've got, I'm going to say almost, I'll ask you this. Did you feel there's a luxury here, not only because you were doing something that had been you kind of done before, but that you didn't have to lay as much groundwork as you did in the past?
Yeah. There's a luxury to not having to announce yourself.
And also there's a relaxed quality about this, which kind of makes the sort of undercurrents of anxiety and grasping for a sense of self, which is still very much a part of the show, it makes it a lot more nuanced now, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's
that's something you have to kind of earn with the show, because in a lot of ways, when we talked about this year before, you had to explain for people.
Yes, and now you walk out in the world and you don't have to explain. I think there are still probably places in the world and the country where you would, but not here, not in L.A.
I don't want to use the word immersive just because I hate it because it gets used so much, but the advantage of the way that I guess the TV dramatic world has changed, you cannot just sort of say, this is the space immediately, and just presume now that viewers will jump in. I don't know if they would have 10 years ago or not, but you can assume they would have jumped in now in the way that assumption wasn't made 10 years ago.
We're assuming that and certainly hoping it. I mean, that it's just, it's a more kind of inclusive world, and people, I mean, I said a minute ago there's an invitation, but I think a lot more people feel comfortable just walking in.
I guess I'm asking this too because you also don't have the luxury that you had 15 years ago of having time to win the audience over. You got to make an impact right away now, don't you?
That is true. I don't know how this works. It seems to be still more true on broadcast television. I really feel like, especially, you know, my friends at Showtime, streaming and cable, people still get behind shows they believe in. We want to make an impact. We want people to know we're here and to flock to us. But I also believe that we have a chance to make our case, to win people over and have, you know, that word of mouth phenomenon still. I hope that that's still possible.
I guess I'm bringing these things up because the show is servicing a lot of characters now. Mm-hmm. And that's something you've done in venues after you left Elwood.
Yeah.
And I just wondered if that was something that an appetite that was created for you. You just felt like the palette needs to be broader now.
It's what I like doing. Yes.
Okay.
I mean, I do think the palette needs to be broader. I think that, you know, we can't represent everyone anytime, but it's great that the palette is broader, and I like telling stories in which you can spend a little bit of time with these folks and then go away from them and go here for a bit. And I think that it makes it actually, I don't want to say easier, but there's just, you know, it makes it possible to sustain interest rather than having to constantly follow just one path. There's a lot to say. There's a lot of interest and kind of intersecting threads of thematic threads.
Well, I was recording this pretty early on in the show's run, but are you finding that there are people who are interested in the show that you've talked to who hadn't really seen The L Word before but want to sort of just see what that was all about?
I think so. I mean, I haven't been out talking to everybody, but I get the sense of that. But I also get another sense, which is that The L Word, the original version, has continued to be watched by new generations of people. I was struck by two things. When we did the Pride Parade early this year in New York, there were so many young women out in the streets, women who were toddlers when the original show was on the air, screaming their heads off when Jennifer and Kate and Leisha appeared. And I don't know, am I allowed to curse on this show?
Let's
not. No. Okay. Then I won't say what they said. But there was this refrain that I kept hearing about Shane. And this was all along the parade route. That was just fabulous. And to see, like, you know, 16-year-old girls screaming like they were seeing the Beatles because it was Shane, that was a revelation to me. And also, when we made the original show, my daughters, I have twin daughters, I think they were 6 years old when we started. They're 24 now, and they both tell me that their friends have all watched the show.
Wow, that's a great place to end. And then I'm going to thank my guest Eileen Chaykin, creator of The L Word, for her restraint. She's executive producer of The L Word Generation Q, was also on Showtime. Recording engineer here at NPR West is Marcia Caldwell. The show is mixed and kind of edited by Kat Yore. I'm not going to scream at all. It's the tree dad. Catch up on past episodes with the treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. The treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.